Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, welcome back. Brady and Walker, our 2 o'clock hour. So I said yesterday on the show, it feels to me like the Blue Jays have a bit of a run in them here. Maybe it's not a heavy statistical-driven analysis. We'll call it a gut feeling more than anything. I think the Jays are over the worst. We'll say that. There's been a lot of worst so far this season. Drew Hutchison going to join us at 2:40 this afternoon. And it's no coincidence, he was the guy stirring the drink on a possible winning streak. He threw a Maddux last night, which is almost as dominant as you can get. A Maddux, for those of you who don't know, Greg, is a complete gamer.
I've read up in the last 10 minutes. Thanks.
A complete game shutout, at least 9 innings with fewer than 100 pitches. It was the 3rd in the majors this season, the 15th over the last 2 seasons. And according to Game Score, was the 6th best pitching performance we've seen this year in the bigs. Yeah, look at Walker with his advanced stats.
Way to go. I hear you. Way to go. Now, give me the runs created formula. I know how to do that.
I take you back to a year ago, a little over a year ago. It's May the 16th. Drew Hutchison went into Arlington and threw his last shutout, a 2-0 win over Yu Darvish and the Rangers. The Jays won 16 of their next 19 ball games. I still think this Jays team is better equipped than the team last season, even though they haven't played like it. So, once again, is Drew Hutchison the guy who kickstarts a run here? R.A. Dickey will have a lot to say about that. But we've seen it before, and we've seen it recently. Was last night a turning point for Drew Hutchison or for this whole ball club?
This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, our 2 o'clock hour. Drew Hutchison, after 2:30, he'll join us live as we get it set for tonight's ball game. But his ball game was great last night. John Danks, the lefty, will go against R.A. Dickey tonight. Lots of splits that are very favorable for the Jays hitters against John Danks. Chris Colabello's 4-for-8 lifetime with a homer. Josh Donaldson's 4-for-9 with a homer. Danny Valencia, look out, he'll be in the lineup tonight. 8-for-23 with 3 doubles and a homer against John Danks.
He hits lefties. If he does anything, he hits lefties.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought about that Hutchison start. And I was thinking about the Darvish duel, if you will. That was a Friday night in Arlington last May 16th. And things started to really launch into the stratosphere for the Jays, and it lasted a good 3.5 weeks, how great their run was. Because people just think, well, they were okay in April, they were unbelievable right out of the gate in May, and they weren't necessarily, but by the middle of the month, they had a bad series against the LA Angels in early May, and transitioned into the Texas series, and they were great there. And then next thing you know,
16 of 19,
they're going to Fenway and winning, they're sweeping at Comerica Park, they're doing okay. They get the Rays monkey off their back, which took a long time. So the positivity with the rotation, do you feel at all it's canceled out by this lingering issue with Jose Bautista? Yesterday, he's in front of microphones and says, I won't do exploratory surgery, nor would I, actually, unless it's they tell me what I have right now is career-threatening. Like, they can't seem to put a finger on this one way or the other. And as Greg Zahn told us yesterday, Bautista looks less than comfortable throwing. The goal is for him potentially to be back in the lineup tonight as a DH, and DH the next few evenings, tomorrow matinee, maybe hopefully as well, and into Minnesota. And as we talked about in the 1 o'clock hour Monday, it's sort of do something or get off the pot with what you want to do with Jose Bautista, because you've got 6 games without a DH in the next 10. Starting Monday.
I mean, do I think it cancels out? No. I think the key to this team putting together wins is getting starting pitching like they have over the last week. In terms of where your strength lies, and in terms of, you know, when this thing really matters, like when we're talking middle of July, early August, and you look at the standings and see where they are in the division, It's not ideal. It's never been ideal. In a perfect world, Jose Bautista's playing every day in right, mm-hmm. and Donaldson's playing every day at third, and Edwin Encarnacion is your everyday DH, and you have a Smoke, Valencia, Colabello, whoever works with the opposing pitcher standing there at first base, and then you have the other guys coming off the bench. I mean, that's a perfect world, right? Devin Travis is back, and Deonna Navarro is back, and go down the list. The Jose thing has, we've always said, it has multiple ripples to it. And I'm not a doctor. Everyone's trying to speculate.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's not above board. There's something wrong. You just don't know how bad it is.
It tells you how bad, to go back to the Jays pitching, it tells you, Joe Siddle's going to join us in a few minutes, by the way, it tells you how bad their pitching was. Like, historically bad. Like, expansion team bad.
Yeah, it was the worst in the majors in the first month and a half of the season.
If they're finally not the worst. This morning, I looked, and they're finally not the worst in the American League. Boston is, with a 5.17 ERA for starters. And the Jays starters' ERA is 4.92. They still have the worst walks and hits per innings pitch. Behind everybody, but specifically behind Boston, who's 14th and not feeling any better. Yeah, I wonder. We'd have a totally... Like, it's very, very difficult to assess because... In your one hand, you've got the Jays' record, and you know it's not good. And there's so many, like you said, bad things, warning signs, troublesome issues. And then in the other hand, / fist, you have the damn division.
Three and a half back.
Like the
could be 2.5 tomorrow.
Yeah, it makes you absolutely, compelled to believe that they're in a race to make a playoff spot at 21-26. And no one's won with less than 87 wins in ages in this division. I think you got to go back tonight to 2000. That Yankees team that played in the Subway Series with the Mets had a bad win-loss record. It was a bad, just down. Everybody had a down season in the AL East that year, including the Blue Jays. But it's the belief factor that anybody, Andrew, with Tampa, with the Yankees, and certainly now with Baltimore and Boston, that any of those teams is better equipped than the Jays to go 14-6 in 20 games, or even 7-3-10. It's not there. It's not there. Even though the Yankees ripped off a bunch of wins in a row and got back to normal, they haven't been lately. They've lost 8-10 now. And though they won yesterday, they'd lost it
11-13.
Yeah,
with the Yankees. I think when we were, and this was kind of always the thought, because you can't win without pitching, but we've seen Drew Hutchison enough. We've seen Mark Burley enough, and even R.A. Dickey. I know he's the whipping boy here in town, and he goes tonight. His first 2 years here in Toronto, 200 innings, and he's given you a bunch of quality starts, and his ERA is somewhere around 3.75-4.
It's still not what they brought him here for.
No, but we always knew that this year, Drew Hutchison wasn't going to finish with a 9 ERA. R.A. Dickey's not going to lose 20 games and have an ERA of 7.5. They were always going to get better.
It was going to get self-corrected a little bit.
The question was when and how long. And what would that deficit be when you're playing some bad baseball? And as it turns out, 3.5 games is not a real big one.
Do you look at the bullpen, given that we haven't talked about it very much, and Liam Hendricks has been a revelation. Like, at first, everyone's groaning that he's going to make the team. He may make the team as the 13th pitcher, the 8th guy out of the bullpen. And in 16 outings, he's been incredibly reliable. They haven't pushed him into a lot of high-leverage situations. We've said it ourselves. There haven't been that many high-leverage situations for the Jays. They seem to win by 3 or 4. They lose by 3 or 4 or even more. They've had the one extra inning game in almost 50. That's unbelievable.
He's been their best guy not named Roberto Osuna. But I think that the bullpen is a direct correlation to the starters. Guess what? When your starters can't get out of the fourth inning like we saw the first month, your bullpen arms get taxed. You know, if you have to pick up 3, 4, 5 innings every night without fail, you're going to run out of steam. But, and the only guy that didn't was Ozuna.
There's been some signs as well with Steve Delabar that he looks, it's a very small sample size. He's pitched 6 1/3 innings. Like, he just hasn't even faced that many hitters. But there's no cause for concern based on watching him that the velocity is bad or he can't throw strikes. He's only, he did walk a bunch of guys the one night, which was greatly concerning, but that was one outing. And in the other six outings, he's been fine.
Do you think it's somewhere in the middle? Again, it helps to have a healthy Jose Bautista back, and we might learn in the next, I'm going to say a week to 10 days, we're going to maybe learn where this eventually ends with Jose Bautista in terms of the plan or a DL stint or something. We're really going to learn a lot, I think, in that Washington series.
Yeah.
But I've said this from day one. The Blue Jays starter's ERA now is under 5 at 4.92. You get that to 4, this is a playoff team. I think so.
It's going to take some time still to get it there, but that has to be an achievable goal. Everyone agrees on that, given how many games are left. Joe Siddall will call it tonight, along with Mike Wilner, and of course, along with Jerry Howarth. As we mentioned earlier, Jays, White Sox, they'll turn around matinee tomorrow, and then it's off to Minneapolis. Joe's kind enough to join us now. Thanks, Joe, for doing this. How are you doing?
Oh, well, fellas, how are you?
Really decent. The pitching has come around a ton in the last 8 days, as everyone's sort of got fingers crossed that, hey, there'll be a bad outing or two. Everybody knows that. That's great, ball clubs have that. But that it just feels like the worst is over, is the best way I can put it, among the starters, at least.
Well, yeah, you certainly hope it is. And I think Burley started that off, that getaway day in Houston. It was a loss, but it was a complete game. And you know, it sounds silly, but I think that means something. I think he really kind of took the bull by the horns there, and I like the fact that John Gibbons let him go the distance there. And despite it being a loss, it's almost maybe a message to the rotation and maybe a message to the bullpen, too, that everybody's got to pick up their socks. And I think after, of course, a month and a half, everyone knows that. But that seemed to get the ball rolling. It's been good since then. Of course, Redmond had the spot start the first day back against the Angels. But this last time, we're almost two times through, the rotation has been much better. And I think you guys said it. I don't think this rotation was as bad as we've seen. It's one thing for a starter to struggle, but to see the whole rotation struggle the way they did, there's no chance at winning ball games. And it looks like maybe they're turning it around now. And funny to see, too, that the rotation is as well. So, you know, pitchers do feed off one another, and maybe that rotation is having an impact on the bullpen, too.
Any more thoughts, additional thoughts on Jose Bautista? I think we both feel that, you know, in comes the quarter zone shot, and with this interleague series coming up, fast approaching in Washington, we might get into that scenario where we kind of can really tell the long-term scenario here with that series. What do you think?
Well, honestly, I wish I was the doctor handling this case, because we all talk about it, but I don't think we know the facts, and that's the problem. Is this has just mystified me that it's gone on this long, because if it was that bad, I would think he should have been on the DL a couple of weeks ago, but this has gone over a month now. So all that we've been told, and I think I heard you guys say it, is that there's no structural damage. That was the quote we heard. I talked to Jose. He told me it's strained. I don't know exactly what that means, but clearly it just seems to me like it's a lot worse than we're hearing. So I just wonder if that is the case, and if something's not being told. I don't think in all my years I've ever seen somebody miss a month because of a strained or sore shoulder. So I'm just worried that there's more damage in there. Maybe they're trying to get through it. But, you know, I think these couple days will be probably a great thing, because, again, I think this settles the team. So you do without Jose for a few days here. But to me, what it does is two huge things, is it puts Justin Smoke at first base, number one defensively, but also to get that power bat back in the lineup. He's swinging it great before all this began, and then it gets Edwin off his feet and DH, and it opens that up. So maybe a few days here could be a blessing, and hopefully Jose comes out of this cortisone ordeal good. But I think if not, yeah, something's got to be done here. It's just dragged on way too long.
Joe Siddall's our guest, of course. Game tonight at Rogers Center, 7:07 start. John Danks against R.A. Dickey. They'll play a matinee tomorrow. Turn it around for a 12:30 broadcast time. Does the division utterly confound you, or do you say, it's so early, there still may be some separation, there still may be some things that that correct themselves? Like, oftentimes you get a weak division, but you get three mediocre teams and two terrible teams. We're not even sure anyone's terrible in this AL East yet.
Well, yeah, first of all, I'm surprised, because I thought, you know, earlier last year like this, I think it was around June, that we had the conversation that somebody is going to pull away in the AL East, and the Blue Jays were clearly a team that could have done that. It turned out to be the Orioles. I think this year, we're at that kind of quarter pole now where I call it parity, mediocrity. I'm not sure what you want to call it, but it's not very good. And what surprises me more than anything is the Red Sox, Yankees, you hear it all the time, and they don't have they're not the superpowers of the East anymore. But I really find it hard that Tampa's hard to believe that Tampa's going to stay up there. I know they have great pitch and we keep talking about it, but they generally just have not swung the bats enough. I got to believe that the Baltimores are going to make a run. I got to believe that Boston may financially make a run because they seem to be able to do that. They have the prospects, and I think they have the cash to acquire someone, and I don't know who that's going to be. And, of course, I'm referring to pitching. So I think those are the teams. The Yankees are still, I mean, going into the season, you just see them as kind of a team that's kind of getting old and injured, and Tanaka's supposed to come back.
Hold on, Joe. I'm going to shove you on hold and see if we can get a better connection there. He's rolling through the teams there, but same thought on Boston, I think, is I mean, there's Joe Kelly goes out and gets beat up again yesterday. Masterson's already on the DL. They were hoping for something from him, even at the bottom of the rotation.
And, sure, yeah.
And I don't think they traded. You know, I watched Rick Porcello a long, long time be a number three starter, and they didn't bring him in there to have an ERA in the five. So it's not what they traded Jonas Cespedes for. Sorry, we lost you there for a sec, Joe. You were talking about the Yankees specifically and where they were, and especially rotation-wise, with Pineda being great and Tanaka being injured.
Yeah, Pineda being great, and he's had a couple of rough ones too. So Tanaka coming back can help, but then you've got Sabathia, who's, let's face it, he's on the downside. So they're not world beaters anymore. The lineup was very good when they were on their good run there, but I think losing Ellsbury is key because I know when we saw them, having Ellsbury and Gardner at the top of that lineup was just outstanding. And the Teixeiras, the Belchers, these guys, Brewster, McCann's, are starting to swing it. Teixeiras, of course, having a pretty good year, not for average, but he's driving the ball. So those things can help, but it's just, yeah, nobody is really solid around. And I think when you look at this Blue Jays club, the way they hit, and even if it's with Bautista out of the lineup, they seem to be mixing and matching just fine. They just need to pitch okay. They need to be in the middle of the American League. They don't need to be top, because I think big picture at the end of the year, this offense is still going to be a top five offense in the American League again.
So Drew Hutchison last night was terrific. Gets through at 96 pitches, which is difficult to do. We've seen him do it before. We commented on his complete game shutout last year in Arlington, and it seemed to kind of kickstart this team. They won 16 of their last 19. Was Drew's struggles with all these starting pitchers, is he the guy that it kind of confounded you the most?
I think it probably confounded me the most because I was leaning on him to really make the move. And, you know, maybe that's asking too much. We have to remember he is still 24 years old. And I know people get tired of hearing that because they say he's a big leaguer and he needs to go. But I think with the injury to Stroman, he was the one I was really looking to make a move. You have to hopefully expect maybe not the same from Burley and Dickey. They're both a year older. You might not get the same, but you still expect some sort of decency. They've had their struggles, but they've also shown signs. But, yeah, for Drew, he was the guy for me that, you know, after Stroman, and you can't really, I don't think, go into the season counting on great things from Sanchez and Norris just because you don't know what you're going to get. But after that full season last year, coming off surgery, the Tommy John, I thought this was the year for Drew to step up. And, you know, maybe he felt more pressure on himself, too, with the injury to Stroman, that he has to be that guy. I would think that's not going to be his answer because I've talked to Drew enough, and he's just such a gamer. He wants the ball. And if he doesn't go nine innings like he did last night, he's not happy about something. He can pitch a great ball game, go seven or eight, and he's going to nitpick the things he didn't do well. That's how much of a perfectionist he is. I think last night showed us again he's had brilliant spots. We saw it last year. And unfortunately, last season, he was just that kind of good-bad sometimes, much better in the second half. But I think what we saw from last night is what Drew Hutchison is capable of. Now he just needs to find some form of consistency. And I'm not saying going shutout in nine shutout innings every night, but he just needs to find that sort of consistency where every 5 days this team can kind of lean on him and count on a good ballgame from the starter.
Yeah, they need it. It's Dang Sticky tonight. We'll be listening. Joe, thanks very much for this.
All right, guys. Take care.
Joe Siddle joining us on Brady and Walker. We'll get to Drew Hutchison is going to join us himself after 2:30.
Now, we won't be listening because I'm about 90% sure now that Greg Brady will make his Rogers Center debut tonight.
I felt like I was there for something else. Was that just a dream?
Yes.
What about the up front with the shows?
That was last year.
Okay. That was when Tyrant was introduced, and we're both like, we're both going to watch Tyrant. And I kept watching Tyrant on FX. I really liked it. And Fargo.
And Blackish is still around.
I'm watching that every night. Right. I've got my DVR is full of it.
Right.
My
what date is it air?
I just watch anything with... I like the Lawrence Fishburne guy.
Okay, but I'm going, and I know you have a ticket in hand, because I placed it in your palm yesterday, and you're coming tonight.
God, I might have left it on the GO train this morning. I don't remember.
Well, I have
you might
two
have a stranger,
house,
actually. You sound more like a broker than actually an employee to some extent. Yeah, I think I'm going to go. So we'll send pictures and let people know what we're eating and drinking.
Yeah,
and
where we're sitting. You can buy us drinks.
I don't have to drive home until, like, you know, 1 a.m. and then it's a five-minute drive.
When you leave in the top of the sixth,
I'm not. No, tonight's train and... like, you've never had to pay somebody to watch your cats. Like, if you had to have a cat sitter that you're paying $13 an hour to.
You have a sitter tonight.
No, there is no sitter. My wife is the sitter. Oh, I don't have to have a sitter.
Right.
I'm not, I can, you know, tonight I let loose as much as I do.
You were watching, my favorite part of your Twitter account, no, it's not the 80s music rants. My favorite part of your Twitter account is when you're watching a sport and a guy gets hit, whether it be hockey, whether it be baseball, whether it be last night, basketball. So Steph Curry leaves an elimination game, Houston's elimination game, after suffering what they called a head contusion. Didn't look good, but there we see him warming up in the hallways, and he comes back and he plays in the second half. Houston stays alive with a victory.
He was gone about an hour, 70 minutes or so, from the time of the injury to the time he walked back to the time he reemerged from the tunnel and was coming back in the game. And many people said, you're up 3-0 and you're down in the game. You got two factors right there. You're down by 15 or 20. Right then, it wasn't a very close game. Golden State never got the lead back. Right. I don't think they got to within 5 after he came back.
But there is this crowd of, as you like to put it, Twitter doctors.
Medical Twitter.
Like George Clooney from ER, medical Twitter, that were yelling brain injury and all that stuff. And I generally side with you on this. If the guy is, you're either okay or you're not okay. And he's not coming back into the game if he's not okay. Anyway, I found it entertaining last night, but I think you're right.
Our number is 416-870-0590, star 590. I'd love for a lot of people to tell me, and we're showing the video of it now, and it's a remarkably awkward hit. Jalen Rose pointed this out at halftime, that there were a lot of different areas which could have been damaged.
Oh, sure,
his
neck.
He could have broke his wrist. He landed, the wrist was underneath his back, and he could have easily snapped his right wrist when he goes up. So he came back. Also, medical Twitter goes bonkers because he throws an air ball up for the first three-pointer, but then settles in, utilizes a decoy. He's passing fine. He's passing to Klay Thompson. He's passing to Draymond Green. And they're making baskets and getting back in. Then he hits a couple threes himself. Our number's 416-870-0590, star 590. I never want to underestimate. Like, people say, oh, you guys don't take concussions seriously and brain injuries and blah, blah, blah. I sure do. I absolutely do. I feel like I've had a couple of them. I can understand the I think I wish I'd been treated with a little more caution, but not as much caution, because we've got people going outer limits in terms of how they're reacting. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, it's incredibly fair.
Especially in baseball, where you can't re-enter the game. You get taken out in baseball. Doug Fister's the famous example I always use in that World Series when he had a batted ball grazed the side of his cap. And he was pitching a gem, and guess what? He dusted himself off, didn't have any delay, never was even on his knees, and
pitched a whale of a ball game.
They still lost, but pitching a gem.
I don't think that's overreacting. In fact, I think you're maybe even a little too diplomatic about it.
Why? I don't know why it makes me so furious. It is the one thing. There are times it happens in sports, and I think I'm just going to leave. I'm not on. My phone's nowhere near me. I'm nowhere near a device. I'm just going to leave this alone because I know what's going on. And last night, I just couldn't help myself. It enrages me how sanctimonious people get about other people's health.
It's very, and I know we want to make this a regular feature, and I know we've done it before, but it's the whole Louis C.K. of course, but maybe thing. Like, of course we should treat concussions with the due care and attention and caution that they're well deserved. Of course a blow to the head is a big thing. But it's why we have medical staffs. It's why we have protocol. And it doesn't matter that Golden State was down in the game or that Golden State is up 3-0. None of that matters. Can he play? Is he hurt?
Right.
Or isn't he hurt?
Right.
Like, you don't think that the doctors that are employed by the Golden State Warriors and the franchise itself has more invested in Steph Curry than one second half in Houston? Of course
he's
they are.
He's worth hundreds of million dollars to his franchise. It's way more than that contract. If they're to win the NBA Finals, so anybody who thinks, even at 3-0, you're right. It's can he play, can he not play? But even at 3-0, even I was a little bit surprised that they did bring him back in. And I loved how Mark Jackson... Where's Mark Jackson, his former coach, who says, I would not put him back into this game? Then they do, and he says nothing. Like, are you a commentator or not? Jeff Van Gundy, at least, will give you an opinion from time to time. It's incredible that these guys stick to your guns here. Stay with the program.
Right. But
tell
you're hurt or you're
you
not.
Think.
But you're hurt or you're not hurt. You're not almost... Okay, so, like, if I'm playing men's league hockey tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And if I take a real bad tumble on the ice... and go into the end boards awkwardly, and I'm fine, and I come back to the bench, well, wow, I almost broke my leg. Well, did you break your leg or didn't you break your leg?
Right, exactly.
Right? Am I going to go to the dressing room and say, guys, I can't play the rest of the game because I almost broke my leg? If it's not broken, then get back out there.
Can I tell you what's harder to do than play basketball in a crowded arena with a concussion? Get on an airplane and sit there with that air pressure for 3.5
sure,
hours.
Text on a phone.
That's a lot harder. I've gotten on an airplane with a headache before, and it's awfully painful.
Right.
No one's minimizing this.
People just act, especially the social media crowd. People just act like we have no idea what we're doing in terms of the medical personnel and the protocol.
I'd say look in the mirror, stay in your lane, look in your own backyard. There's people telling the Golden State that, you know, they're doing the wrong thing. You're almost immoral. And health wise, I could look at them and go, you know what? You should lose not 10 pounds, not 20, not 30, but 150. So maybe you should look more at your own health than whether you're worried about Steph Curry. It's got nothing to do with who's got character and who doesn't. No one's saying that.
Does the game situation change, though? Like, because I understand it. I understand if this is game 7 of the NBA Finals, why it's a little more of a conspiracy theory thing, right? Like, is he actually okay? I believe that he was okay last night.
Why? And let me ask you this really quick. If they said to... So Isaiah Thomas plays, scores 25 points in the fourth quarter in Game 6 of 1988. It's one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in my life, on one leg. And he can barely get around for Game 7. But if someone said to you, Andrew, you're a hockey player, and they say, listen, you could go out and play, you got a bad knee. You could go out and play this Game 7 Stanley Cup final game, but you may never walk properly again afterwards. You may never be able to go for a long 10-mile jog. You playing in the game? Sure as hell you are, right?
Of course.
I won't tell anybody that the brain isn't the most important thing we're talking about here. But it's amazing that that gets completely taken out of the individual's control, but you're in charge of everything else. You want to risk your shoulder? People say, have at it. You want to risk your knees? Have at it. Richard in Calgary, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Brady and Walker.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make two quick points. The first one was, I don't think Curry should have came back in, considering that the Warriors were up 3-0 and on their way back home for Game 5. And in addition to the fact that players initially passed the concussion test, but subsequently failed the test the next day, you know.
Sure, he could be in worse shape today, but playing in the game last night didn't affect that.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, when you consider their position, I mean, why not wait one more game? I mean, they're going to go to the NBA Finals and face the Cavaliers for sure.
I almost wonder if that's a little relevant or irrelevant. Are you? And that's my point. Are you hurt or are you not hurt? Right. If you're not hurt, like if you're sore, 3-0, 3-1, game 60, then play.
Let's get one more in. Lucas, Drew Hutchison after 2:30. By the way, Lucas, you're on Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Go ahead, Lucas.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just want to point out. I heard the last guy call in there. I think a lot of with concussions, it's not like an ankle injury. There's even a lot of the concussion test is open-ended questions, so there has a little bit of trust in the player. And if he's saying he's good to go, when it comes to head injuries, you got to kind of trust that player. And my second point is almost a question, I guess. The NFL put like league-wide, league-represented people on the sidelines to kind of make those decisions. Does the NBA have anything like that?
I don't know if there's impartial, if you will, doctors. Well, everybody remembers Robert Griffin III running away from the doctor in that Washington Seattle. He was trying to hide from the doctor on the sidelines in that Washington-Seattle playoff game 2 years ago.
And I would also say that obviously football is a collision-oriented sport, and there you have, you know, 40 to 60 players on the sidelines. It's tougher to mandate. For sure it is. NBA, like here we are, we're talking about, you know, you have 10 guys sitting there on the bench. And I think that you can put a little, but that goes back to the, like, if there was an inherent risk with Steph Curry going back into this game, the Golden State Warriors are the last people that want him playing.
I'm just shocked that Fred on a couch can diagnose a concussion, but the doctors, the league, Steve Kerr, the teammates, the Golden State trainers, and yes, Steph Curry himself are all okay with him playing, but Fred's not. Drew Hutchison coming up in just a little bit. We'll also tell you about the plan, potentially. Some say the NFL should have a one-and-done domestic violence policy. We're going to kick that around. Believe it or not, that's got some pros. It's got some cons as well. We'll deal with that next. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Back to Brady and Walker on TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Drew Hutchison coming up in a little bit. Had a great start last night. We'll have to ask him if the little peptic acid after he said he had a stomach bug. That's a hell of a game for a stomach bug. We'll say that. And we've seen it before. Of the Jays outings, like, Roy Halladay had many, many moments. I always think about Brandon Morrow's game in September of 10.
Against Tampa Bay.
Right, yeah. Where there was a ground ball hit to Aaron Hill, just couldn't make it. I mean, he made a great play just range-wise to get to the ball, but couldn't get there in time. But I think that was a 17-strikeout, one-walk game for Brandon Moore.
Yeah, don't have it in front of me. Two-hitter or something like that. Yeah, incredible. Well, and last night, so on this Drew Hutchison start, so we had talked about, so a Maddox is, now maybe some people were hearing the term for the first time last night. And it was something.
I've always known the term existed.
Okay. Well, it was something that Greg Maddux did. It's called the Maddux. I mean, it's the opposite of the Gordie Howe hat trick, because Gordie Howe only had like three Gordie Howe hat tricks. But a Maddux is a complete game shutout of at least 9 innings where you pitch less than 100 pitches, which is difficult to do. Maddux did it 13 times in his career.
It's real tricky, though. Two names that only the diehards will recognize. Zane Smith had 7, the one-time Pirates pitcher. Bob Tewksbury had 6, and then you got your Hall of Famers like Glavine and potentially Roy Halladay had 5 in his career.
Right. So there's been 3 this year in the majors, and Shelby Miller had the first 2.
Yeah.
And Hutchison last night. There was 12 last year in the majors as well. So it happens more often than, say, a no-hitter, because sometimes it does feel like it feels like a no-hitter. Every weekend, someone has a no-hitter in the 7th or 8th, right?
Yeah. So a chance to go for 3 straight tonight. It's John Danks against R.A. Dickey. They'll play a matinee tomorrow before shifting off to Minneapolis. That's when we'll see our next guest with another start. But he was borderline brilliant last night. Drew Hutchison joins us on Brady and Walker. Great to have you on, Drew. Congratulations. What a great outing for you, yeah?
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
How's the stomach, first of all? I'm sure that's you mentioned you had a bit of a bug. Was it a 12-hour, 24-hour? You're feeling better now?
No, yeah, we're all good. I was able to get everything out of the system and good after that. So it wasn't really a big deal.
So last time out against the Angels, you were pretty strong and then hit a bit of a bump there in the 7th inning. What's been the difference that start, this start, between this and the earlier struggles this season?
I was just able to get ahead and get strike one and, not get deep in the counts, pick the contact. Last night I was able to get ahead and, get some quick innings, get some early ground balls and, just to get ahead and, attack the hitters has been the difference.
Is there a corner turn, Drew, in the Boston start back on May 9th? The whole month, you've had 5 walks, 30 strikeouts. I mean, it's as your control has just been unassailable. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, I think my fastball command's really improved. That's the main thing for me, and everything comes off of that. So when I can have the fastball command like that and it opens up everything else. I felt like after that game and really into the game in Houston, I really found my command and my slider, coming off of that. So I feel like I've thrown the ball a lot better.
Everyone's been talking in the first month and a half about the struggles of the starting rotation. You're well aware of that. Has there been more of an adjustment period to Russell Martin than expected? How much does having a new guy behind the plate impact everything?
No, I just think we pitched bad. I think it was that simple. You know, obviously that's not the way we expect to pitch or we're going to pitch the rest of the way out. I just think we came out and did a terrible job of pitching the first month, especially with the way the offense was going. And, you know, that was on us. And, you know, right now we're trying to go out there and get deep into games. And I think we've been doing a good job of that lately. And we look to continue to do that as we expect to.
Feel like the worst is over in that context. The last 8 days, everybody has picked each other up, and you guys have won some tighter ball games without needing huge offensive outbursts.
Yeah, I mean, I just think we've gone out there and done what we're capable of doing. Obviously, bad games are going to happen every now and then, but not on the consistent basis that we were doing it, you know, the first month. But it is what it is. Those games are over. We are where we are, and, you know, we just need to go from here and get on a run and, you know, start playing good baseball.
Do you feel like it's a contagious thing? People say, you know, if the guy in front of you and the guy behind you gets a base hit, you're likely to follow suit. Is there something like that with the starting rotation where you can kind of build off each other?
Yeah, definitely. I think you can feed off one another when, you know, guys are going out there having good starts, getting deep into the game. You kind of feed off it and you want to do better than the guy the night before you. And I think that's been going on a little bit with everybody going deeper into games and, you know, going out there and pounding the zone and, you know, giving our team a chance to win every time we go out there.
This can end with a fairly successful homestand over the next two games. You guys do go on the road, Minnesota and then Washington. Your road record's 8-15. I would assume you guys don't need even to tell you. You guys need to get more consistent away from Rogers Center. Everybody's talked about that. That's very self-evident. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, obviously, you know, it speaks for itself, and you know, we've got a lot of games to make up and play well. You know, we're, you know, two games under 500, so we just need to go out there and do what we're capable of doing and get on a little bit of a roll, which, you know, I expect we will do. We'll go from there.
What do you make of the Jose Bautista thing? He's back in tonight, and I think if you're a fan, if you're in the media, or maybe you have a different view as a player in the sense of it's a long season, but you also have a guy that's trying to play hurt or battle through. Is it inspiring to you, or does it go the other way?
I mean, he's doing everything he can to be out there. You know, obviously we're a better, you know, team with Jose and the lineup than we are without him. So, you know, he's out there doing everything he can to be in the lineup and play every day. You know, he's been, you know, battling through, you know, being banged up and, you know, continuing to battle out there, you know, and offensively. And, you know, hopefully his shoulder, you know, he turns the corner and is able to play the field soon. But, you know, like I said, we're a better team with him in the lineup, no doubt.
Drew, congratulations on the outing yesterday. We'll look forward to seeing you this coming weekend. Thanks for making time for us today and continued success. It's been a great month for you. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, guys.
There's Drew Hutchison joining us on Brady and Walker. Again, Danks and Dickey tonight at Rogers Center. Attendance, probable. Probable.
I can't
but probably
it.
Means probably really, means something may probably happen. Questionable yeah. would mean why would you even question whether I would go to the game? And doubtful means I have a great doubts that we'll ever spend any time together
are
outside of this radio station.
Are you excited about your first game of the season? Here it's May.
Yes.
What's today? May 26th, May 25th.
Just that first walk up to the concession stand. I'm, right. You know, you get the butterflies a little bit. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm,
yeah.
I may forget how to order food from a vendor. Yes. So yesterday,
beer prices have gone up since the last time you went.
I heard that, yeah. And they've got rid of some brands.
Although,
too.
Sid was there last night.
Oh well, that's
did
their
you see, did
no
you see him
stopping
on, the,
him.
On the broadcast.
No, I didn't.
It was like I'm celebrity sighting.
Gee, I wonder how they knew he was going to be there. So last night, Ray McDonald gets cut by the Chicago Bears. We talked about it during the show.
We predicted that on the show. It's kind of common sense, wasn't it?
Well, yes, but it's the fifth time he's been arrested for a domestic abuse situation. And somehow after four times of being arrested, the Chicago Bears said, we like you. And, you know, fresh starts are fresh starts. So there's a couple things happening surrounding the league. We don't have a ton of time to get into a lot of it. We'll get into it, I'm sure, closer to training camp, because guess what? Someone else will get arrested for domestic violence. That's an NFL player. But there's a lot of talk about punishing teams, potentially, when you draft a guy and he screws up, or when you sign a guy, I should say, and he screws up. I think you could do it when you draft a guy with some kind of a track record. This would be a really tough thing to collate, if you will, to try and figure out what makes the chart and what doesn't. Where do we, and are we ranking domestic violence And it's very, very difficult to do, but it's an adult conversation to have about what's it worse than? What's it not as bad as?
Yeah, that's, do you know what I mean? That's the tricky part. Like, I get it. The NFL doesn't want this really, really ugly black eye on their game. It's already sick of the Ray Rice, Adrian. I mean, every scenario is different, but Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, Greg Hardy go down the list, and now Ray McDonald a couple times. It's the last thing they want. Anything you put in place is meant to, well, what's the word? It's not meant to punish. It's trying to ensure that guys think twice before getting in trouble. But that's, yeah. But right. I mean, that's the question. Can you say domestic violence is worse than, I don't know, selling drugs or what Plaxico Burress did or tax evasion? I don't know. I mean, I think I know.
There have been nine players arrested for domestic violence since the Ray Rice video hit the mainstream.
Right.
So my issue there is there's two ways to look at it. One is, is the NFL really willing to have a big conversation about this and do one of two things? You either just say, you get arrested and we are going to be, we're a different judge and jury. We're a little bit different here. Like, I'll put it this way. If Michael Vick had been not convicted and not sent to prison, the league was still going to punish him anyway because there was clearly involvement that
you're
the league didn't
trouble.
Like. Yes,
right.
You have an image to maintain one way or the other. We all agree if Aaron Hernandez was acquitted, okay?
I don't know if he's getting a job again.
Exactly. So, now again, these are really extreme examples, and I'm not meaning to parallel them. But there's two calls to make here. One is that zero tolerance means zero tolerance.
There's no second chances with zero tolerance.
There's no second chances. If we think if you've gotten convicted, if we think you've paid off a witness, if we think you've intimidated an ex-wife or girlfriend, like this is.
Does this go beyond though to societal then? Because don't we believe in second chances?
I don't think you have to give everybody one. I don't think you do. This Bears case is kind of fascinating here because the general manager, Ryan Pace, wanted to sign him. And he goes to George McCaskey, the Bears owner, and he says, I want to sign Ray McDonald.
You know they've discussed the risk of it.
The owner says, no, not happening. It's not happening. Pace went again and apparently again a third time to try and convince him. Now, is this all getting out? Now you still have to be responsible for the organization, right? Somebody hires a bad employee or a nightmare of an employee. You can't always not pass it upstairs and go, well, he was the guy you gave me approval. He was the guy you wanted. There's going to be lots of infighting about it. But it's not a good look for the general manager now because the general manager has to explain, well, I thought he changed. And anyway,
right.
You know, he was really nice and he wore a suit. Anybody can do that. Anybody can look good in a 20-minute in-person interview.
Speaking of delineating between what's worse and what isn't worse, right? Richie Incognito is getting a second chance in Buffalo.
Right.
Right? But he's not viewed as quite the pariah that a Ray McDonald, Greg Hardy is.
No. And it's very, very difficult, right? It's a really tough call, like you said. And again, it's a mature conversation because everybody who has something that's meaningful to them, there are people who think and who have been personally affected, and they'll go, well, there's nothing worse on the planet than a drunk driver because something terrible has happened to them. And I understand that. I will never turn and try and talk them out of it. But if you've been a battered spouse, you will think there's nothing worse than someone who would do that. I can't think of anything lower than somebody who would hit a woman, hit a child. But there's people also who say murdering pets. Like, we're in on all this stuff here. And all this stuff comes back to players in the NFL doing this. So I don't know. I don't know where it goes in a situation like this. Like, the teams will... I worry the teams will cover up even more crap that their players do if they think, oh, wow, we'll lose our third-round draft pick. If they find out that that our man here was out of the club and he grabbed a waitress, right, and he's gotten arrested overnight. That's what I worry about.
I would think that any player that thinks or hopes that they are eligible for a second chance, I mean, Ray McDonald really screwed them over this week, right?
Yes. Yeah,
basically.
Absolutely. For everyone else who thinks they're meriting a second chance. We'll talk to Dave Maloney, Rangers radio color analyst, Rangers Lightning. Game 6 is on CBC coming up tonight. Coming up next, thoughts on LeBron. Getting back to the NBA Finals. It may happen in about 6 hours. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.